Kia ora. Welcome to the third season of Power Up Podcast, powered by Venture Taranaki and produced by Raw Collective. We're back again to celebrate the successes of even more remarkable Taranaki entrepreneurs as we highlight their stories and showcase the best of work and play in this exceptional region. In this season, we're talking to trailblazing enterprise owners and founders in energy, tech and well-being, beverage crafters, commercial developers, and digital storytellers. And it's no exaggeration to say that some are genuine world leaders in their field, pioneering positive global change while living the famous Taranaki like no other lifestyle. I'm your host, David Downs. Let's discover why Taranaki is a region where unique natural and business environments collide, enabling people to flourish, both at work and home. No mai, haere mai, we welcome you to hear our enterprising future like no other. Boring oat milk is anything but. New Zealand's oat milk company has been a game changer since it was founded in 2021. Morgan Moore saw a gap in the New Zealand market, where we grew great oats, but relied on international producers for oat milk. She started the company 2 days before a snap COVID lockdown, but even that didn't stop her milk from flying off the shelves. In fact, one of the biggest early challenges was keeping up with a massive demand. Morgan's initial forecasts were drastically underestimated, and 2 years on, boring oat milk is a staple in cafes, supermarkets, and kitchens all over the country. Well, kia ora and welcome.
Thank you.
Where have you come from today?
Strandon, so not too far away.
I don't even know where Strandon is. Is that a suburb?
It's by East End Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Between East End and...
My wife reliably informs me that Back Beach is the best beach.
It is great. It is a really good beach. Depends what you're after. But, oh, yeah, Back Beach is stunning.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we live just like 3 minutes walk from Fitzroy, East End Beach.
Oh, and were you born and bred in this part of the world? Yeah.
Yeah, Taranaki. So lived here till I was 18 and then... left the day I turned 18, couldn't wait to get out, you know, just like spread my wings and went to university in Wellington, then did the OE thing, except I like to claim it was a little bit different. I went to Scotland, not England.
Oh, right, so, Paul Pites in London, yeah, Paul Pites in Edinburgh.
Yeah, pretty much. And Auckland, Tamaki Makaurau for the last 10 years and then just moved here in May.
What brought you back?
What brings everyone back? Just like lifestyle.
Yeah.
The maunga, I think it always draws people back here.
Nice. But did you always want to run your own business? We're going to talk a lot about your business. Was that always the plan?
Being brought up in Taranaki, there are a lot of small businesses and you're always just exposed to people who would have their own business. And for me, from the outside, I would see that and associate it with, you know, being your own boss, autonomy.
Freedom.
Yeah, which, you know, now I'm a little bit wiser and I know it means a lot more than that.
It means responsibility.
Yeah. Yes, you can have a day off, but you are going to be working on call most nights and weekends, you know. But I had, it's really cliche, but just a bit of that. Entrepreneurial spirit's probably a lot more modern.
Yeah.
But I was just a little bit of a like hustler as a kid. Like mum and dad would cut down their trees and mulch them. And I was like, great, can I sell some of that mulch, you know, and sell like bags of mulch for $5. And then dad had a really great workshop. He was a woodwork and metalwork teacher, is still. So I'd spend time in his workshop and make jewellery and start selling that. And so I started working really young and, well, you know, working, having a part-time job from a young age just because I was really wanting to save. And I had grand sort of travel plans and stuff like that. And so my first hospo job, apart from the local fish and chip shop, was for Craig McFarlane.
Right.
And so I worked for the McFarlane cafes and he owns Ozone Coffee. And so, and so he's sort of a bit of a, I don't know, mini celeb around here.
Yeah, local legend.
Yeah. And from that, I learned a lot about building community. And I guess, not that I thought of it at the time, but sort of building brand as well. And I was just like, that's really cool.
Nice.
I'd love to do that one day.
And as you travelled the world and did your OE and things like that, what work were you doing? What experiences were you building up?
I finished university in 2009, so just around the time of the GFC. And, I mean, I just was so eager to travel. So saved for about 6 months and then went overseas, but had no experience really in my degree. So I could only do sort of hospitality type work. And ended up in Edinburgh Scotland because my husband and I were traveling for a few months. We had money to travel for, I don't know, 3 months, and we kept extending it out.
Right.
And by the time we finished, like in Europe, and by the time we finished and realized we needed to get to the UK and start earning money, we had £800 between the two of us with no jobs and no accommodation sorted. And
wow.
So we had friends living in London and could just see how expensive it is and how poor, how broke
they
were.
Quickly burned through £800 in London.
Uh-huh, yeah. And then we saw our friends in Edinburgh, and at the time they were living in a hostel and you could work for your rent and the cost of living was just so much less and you could walk everywhere. And so we were just like, yeah, sweet, let's go there. So I went there and then just got whatever jobs I could, signed up for a temp agency, and I just started working for like the most corporate job I think I'll ever work in my life, which was a finance and insurance firm called Standard Life.
Oh.
And there was like 10,000 people that worked there, and it was very corporate attire. And I started off just on reception and then like admin and then got into a marketing team, but it was incredibly dull and
boring.
Yeah,
not that boring. I'm presaging the future, but boring.
Actually okay. Boring, but it was great because I just travelled all the time and just didn't care at all about what I was doing for work.
Nice.
But then I knew that there was an end in sight for that, and there was a time frame that was going to be up because I just, for me, I needed something that was a lot, I mean, most people would need something that's a lot more fulfilling.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was what I did.
That's cool. And that sort of starts to join a whole lot of threads together, your entrepreneurship and your seeing the world and time in hospo, et cetera, brought you then to, we're jumping forward quite a bit, but brought you to Boring Oat Milk. So tell us about how that kind of episode happened.
Well, while I was working behind the desk at Standard Life, I was just always thinking, I had a little notebook that I just write down business ideas and...
Really?
Yeah.
Nerd alert.
And I would just like write them out and I'd like write these sort of faux business plans. And one of them was I saw how much they ate oats over there. And
in Scotland.
True story.
Didn't they kind of invent oats or something?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah, yeah. They grow some of the best oats in the world. And so they put oats in everything, you know, like flapjacks, and they put it in whiskey, they put it in haggis, and they put it in oat cakes as well. So, you know, like oat cakes are like a cracker.
Yeah.
I knew that oats were good, grew well in New Zealand, and I knew that they were good for the land because my auntie has a farm in Midhurst, actually.
Right.
And she used to plant oats for stock feed, but also to help soak up the nitrates in paddocks that were like heavier nitrates to help soak that up. And I thought, how cool. What if I, you know, oat cakes are really popular here. What if I made oat cakes in New Zealand and, you know, we could grow more oats and they'd be really great for dairy farms. And so I had that idea. So I came back to New Zealand and I perfected my recipe over there on Scottish people. I was like, how does this
you
taste?
Experimented, you know, on the Scottish.
Yeah, yeah. And then got the verified tick, the unverified tick actually, from them. And I came back to New Zealand, started working in a marketing job, was in Tāmaki Makaurau, and then I just started a stall at the markets, at the Lasagal markets in Parnell. And so, yeah, I had a oat cake stall there for 15 months and did that on the weekends. And then I went down to part-time with my work and just sort of baked in the day.
So this was the side hustle back then? You were doing another job then? Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Or just my other job probably wasn't doing very well, to be honest.
Yeah,
and then it was after a few months at the market, somebody approached me and they were a regular customer. He came up to me and he said, look, I'm actually a buyer at Foodstuffs. I think your product would go really well in the supermarkets. Like, would you like to be in them? And I was like, yeah, I mean, sure, but I don't know anything about the right sort of packaging or, you know, like how to deal with supermarkets. And he was great. He really like held my hand through that whole like onboarding process.
Yeah.
And and so I ended up getting into some supermarkets. And then over the next few years, I hired more bakers, moved into a space in Penrose, like had my own production kitchen. By the end, and I'll get to that soon, is I had, I think, about 250 stores in New Zealand. So it's called Bonnie Oat Cakes.
Oh, yes.
And
keeping the Scottish thing going.
Uh-huh,
good.
Yeah. And then we started doing a bit of export into Aussie. And I realised that I had this day, I actually met a few really interesting people who have now become part of this group, Future Food Aotearoa, that I'm a part of.
Yeah.
And one of them, he said to me, he was just like, Morgan, your product, it's not an everyday product. It's not scalable. He sort of told me the hard facts. And I was like, yeah, you're right.
Good
you know,
advice.
It is that fancy cracker
yeah.
that people have on their cheese board every other weekend. And if I'm really going to shift the dial in terms of scale and impact back on land, then it needs to be a product that people are consuming every day.
Yeah.
So I went back to the drawing board. Meanwhile, still ticking this along, went back to the drawing board and thought, what is that product? Yeah. And that's when I saw that Oatly, who's like the world's largest oat milk company, and they invented oat milk, they just launched into America and they'd... We're just like, sales were just going crazy. And right. I thought, why can't we have a New Zealand version of that?
Nice. So, that's such a lovely, is Bonnie still going, by the way?
Nah. So I wanted it to, and we started working with a contract manufacturer because I was just so tired of having our own manufacturing. Yeah. And I really needed to work with a contract manufacturer and play to my strengths. Like my strengths are sort of like marketing and brand and sales. And so... But unfortunately, we just worked with the wrong contract manufacturer. And the relationship fell through. And I learned lots of learnings, but no, I lost the business. Well, they stopped production. I couldn't find anyone else to make it. And then we just lost all of our...
All the clients.
Clients, yeah. Oh, and so it was a hard lesson, but I just learned a lot about doing your due diligence on people, going with gut feel. If somebody doesn't feel right,
Don't do it.
And then... The humbling thing was from then until when we launched Boring was 3 years.
Wow.
So
a bit of a dark period of having to get stuff done.
Yeah. So
but it's a wonderful, I mean, you're a great example of, you know, a typical New Zealand or any business really having to go again the second time. Like you learn so much, you know, you have all the elements there, selling in the markets and doing stuff in your kitchen and then suddenly finding a sort of success but realising you had to do something very different.
Yeah.
Awesome. Can we talk a little bit about oats?
Sure. I love talking about oats.
I bet you do. What is the health benefit of oats?
Yeah.
Because you talked about the benefit for the land from oats, which is super cool.
Yeah, oats are really high in fibre, and they've got the fibre in them is called beta-glucan, and that's really good for your heart and cardiovascular system. So, yeah, most people have oats for that fibre content.
Right. And do people have it because they're lactose intolerant or things like that as well?
That's the main reason why people will drink plant milk. And then the first reason is because of allergens and the second is because of sustainability.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's ticking a couple of boxes there.
Yeah.
Did you know all that before you went into the oat business?
Oh, not really. I like to think I did. It did start from a place of like what was known as sort of the environment back then. Sustainability is kind of a relatively new word. Yeah. Mm. And the health, like, I mean, everybody knows like you have your bowl of porridge in the morning and it sort of fills you up and gives you all that stuff. But in terms of the then like consumer need for plant milks and everything that comes along with having being in the dairy, quote unquote, dairy alternative space is just really interesting as well.
Yeah. Oh, how cool. And New Zealand's got some pretty good oats from what I understand. Taranaki here as well, Invercargill and around Southland they grow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we grow oats all over, but in terms of the best oats, in terms of the quality and the yield is down in Southland and Otago.
Yeah.
And that's just because of the long daylight hours. So there's more what they call grain fill period because there's more photosynthesis. And so it's just like good quality big oats.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So here we are now. You've had a bit of a dark period closing down Bonnie's or seeing it disappear. You've had this idea for a new company in the oat milk area. And you must think, the most important thing I can do is really get the brand out there, really be thinking about, I want this on everyone's lips. And you chose Boring. That is quite a bold move.
I know.
Jeepers. Let's talk about the brand.
It's funny actually because I mean, I'll talk about how we came up with the brand in a second, but I loved it from the get-go. But then obviously throughout this process, I did raise money and all the investors we spoke to, everyone was uneasy about it.
Is this the working title, eh? This is the working title, Morgan. You don't actually call it Boring.
Yeah, what about not so boring? What about, you know, and just trying to sort of water it down. And I was just like, no, it's got to be that. It's got to be deadpan. So through my time at Bonnie, I realised the importance of brand. And I realised that if we were going to play in this FMCG space in the grocery, we needed a product that would be that sort of disruptive brand and really stand out on the shelves. We would never have the budget that the big multinationals have for all, you know, advertising spend and displays and stuff like that. And we could never buy shelf space or anything. Yeah. And so what can we do that's just so eye-catching? First of all, what I did was I was like, okay, I've got to find a really good designer and good creative and somebody who's a real strategist, you know, not someone who's just going to create a pretty pack.
Yeah.
And my husband, Nick, and I were just like big design fans and follow the best awards. And, New Zealand designers are just some of the best in the world.
Yeah, and, amazing talent.
Yeah, and just always following that. And there was a design agency that kept popping up, and that was DMY. Right. And the creative director there and the founder there is a guy called Calvin So. And he's done brands like, like 42 Below and Stolen Rum and Serious Popcorn, Triumph and Disaster, like lots of really great potent brands with really good founder stories as well. We met him. We were meant to meet with quite a few brands. We met with him and it was just like, he's incredibly charming and he knows his stuff. And so I was just like, you're our guy. And he set me some like quite intensive homework, which is what I encourage. I mean, everyone should do, but not everyone does do. Because, when you're starting up something, often brand is one of the last things that people look at. They'll sort of be like, okay, cool, we need a cool name, we need the pack to look good, but it's got to go so much deeper than that because otherwise you launch and then after a few months you're like, oh, what do we talk about? You know, there's no depth there.
What do we stand for?
Yeah, exactly. And so first of all, we just did the classic thing of like looking at the supermarket shelves in New Zealand and Australia and a couple of export markets and how do the other competitors look? What are they sort of talking about? And we noticed that there was two really distinct personalities that there were, and so you had, and positioning, sorry, and so you had like the real sort of value brands that are kind of like the lower value ones that are really like actually boring packaging. You know, they'll often have a picture of the plant on them.
Yeah.
Sometimes the wrong picture of the plant. And one of the main brands that I won't name had a picture of a wheat plant on their oat milk for a very long time. And, it's just really uninspiring. And so we're like, obviously we're not going to play there. And their branding is just so watered down that you just, nobody loves it. It's just, it is what it is.
Commodity
you know?
Almost. Product,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Oatleys and the Oatley sort of versions of, like they're all quite similar, where they had very calls to arms, anti-dairy, very vegan, like narrative, and just like childish drawing on the front. And you can get a bit confused with how they look. And so we're like, we can't be that in that. Also, I knew like our packaging, and we can talk about this later, but our packaging was in a bottle, and that's because it's recyclable, unlike the Tetra Pak. So already it was going to look different, but we thought, these guys are actually boring on one side. These guys are all shouting out and being like, look how great we are and exciting we are. And we thought, first of all, we need it to look super minimalist and pared back.
Right.
But then when you actually think of the product, it's like milk isn't exciting. You know, it's like the coffee that's exciting. It's your cereal that's exciting. It's like the stuff that goes with it. Like milk's just a supporting actor.
Yeah, it's the straight man.
And so we're like, milk is quite boring. So,
it's boring milk.
Mm.
Wow. And it is a triumph. I mean, you must have had a lot of recognition of the brand and the packaging and that sort of thing, irrespective of the product. So you've stood out. It worked.
Yeah, it has. It's great. It's great when it works because you don't really know.
Yeah.
Do you?
It's a bit of a risk.
Yeah. And now we get a lot of positive comments about it and I feel like there's a bit of luck involved as well.
Yeah. Now, you also stand for sustainability, or you've definitely thought about sustainability and the environment, as we talked about earlier. Does that make it harder or easier to run a business? It's part of your brand, but it obviously has a production cost impact potentially.
If you think of it in terms of your P&L sheet, maybe, but actually no, because for one, I wouldn't do it any other way, but also consumers care. And if you're going to cut corners and you're going to just sort of, for example, our sunflower oil, we use high oleic sunflower oil that's from New Zealand because it's low in omega-6s.
Yep.
Omega-6s is what like canola oil and rapeseed oil have high amounts of, and it's quite inflammatory in the body. And high oleic sunflower oil is a lot lower in those, so it's a lot better for you. And it's really expensive. It's about 25% more expensive than the other ones, but it's like, well, that's a non-negotiable.
Wow.
So, and consumers do care. Like we get a lot of people saying, it's so great that you use this oil. Admittedly, it's probably about 1 or 2% of the consumers, but I always say this thing that it's like, it may be more expensive up front, but there are savings that we're making in other ways because people see, like, there's real value in that as well, and then that enables more people to love us and to want to keep supporting us as well.
And you know who your consumers are and what they value, and they're probably not as price conscious as some other consumers. They're looking out for it.
Yeah, but it is hard being good, is like quote unquote, because we're a product that's single-use plastic. It's like, I always say we're using the best of the worst options. Like a lot of packaging is just, it's not there yet. And, Yeah, for us, we've got a recyclable bottle and cap. Our sleeve's going to be recyclable very soon. At the moment, it's not, but in the next few months, it will. So that's really cool. But that's what keeps me up at night is no matter what people say, there is always a cost to the products that are out there, no matter how good they are. We're providing a product that's better than what's out there in terms of sustainability, but it's still got a cost to the environment as well. So I think that's something I really grapple with.
That's right. I mean, you've got to provide a product. People need food. I mean, oat milk is good for you, but yeah, you're balancing it out. And you're at a time, and you know, we're all at a time where we're in this transition between the old world and the new, you know, in 30 years' time. Yes, the packaging will all be amazing, I'm sure, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you launched this at a really interesting time too.
I know. God,
tell us about
that. Just add fuel to the fire, eh? Yeah, we launched the 19th of August, 2021, and that was 2 days after lockdown and that big four-month lockdown for Tāmaki Makaurau.
Yeah.
So, again, that was tough because most of my team, so all of our manufacturing's in Hawke's Bay and most of my team are based there. And so that was tough in terms of working from home, but in some ways it was great for us because we had people who were just on their phones and were wanting, like, I guess, positive news.
Yeah.
And so the attention we got and the uplift was amazing.
Sort of media and PR, you mean?
Yeah. It just was a lot of interest and I think people were just wanting a good news story. So that worked in our favour, but, I mean, I wouldn't do it again.
No, tough time. But it obviously worked because your growth has been, from what I understand, pretty phenomenal. Or your forecasting was terrible. One of the two happened.
Oh, yeah. Forecasting's hard, in my defence. It's really hard because you're looking at other – anyway, I won't defend myself. But, yeah, no, I think it's a balance of both. I think my forecasting is atrocious. And then boring's – I mean, you're in this category – it's grown 75% the last year. It was about 130 the year before.
Wow.
Oat milk is now category leader of all the plant milks, and so it's 35%. But I expect that'll go up to about 50% in the next year or two, which is similar to the UK.
Okay.
Country like, but and I imagine we'll go to where Sweden is, which is oat milk has got 75% market share in Sweden.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're and Boring, as of the end of last year, was the leader in the oat milk category.
Jeez, so, congratulations. Yeah. And with only 18 months or whatever, that's incredible. You must be very proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a really great team.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But are you exhausted as well? Because it's obviously growing a business or being part of a business that's growing that quickly brings all sorts of positives but also some challenges.
Yeah, definitely. End of last year, I just had a moment because Boring was doing well and I almost had a moment where I felt like I, you know, when you just almost feel like a little bit complacent, like you're just like, oh, and that terrified me because I just think complacency is like the enemy of good business. And so I just gave myself a bit of a pep talk over the break and all I needed was a couple of weeks off. But it was funny, by the time we launched, for everybody, for most people apart from those who know me really well, they just saw this incredible product and they're like, great. And I was out there doing lots of press and media.
Yeah.
But I was absolutely exhausted by the time we launched because I'd had done like three serious capital rounds and just like near bankruptcy twice. And so it was just like,
always...
by the time we launched, I remember Maury Leyland, she messaged me after I did a video interview and she said, you look tired.
Thanks.
I was like, I am
tired.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. That's true friends, isn't it? Oh, wonderful. And you're in supermarkets and cafes. You've got retail and hospo.
Yeah.
Was that always the plan? Were you always going to go into those channels?
Yeah. I think we thought that we would have had more traction with hospo to start with, but it was just so, we'd planned on it.
Yeah.
But it was just difficult because, you know, I mean, cafes have had the most tumultuous time over the last couple of years. And so retail became our saviour. About 90% of our sales is through retail. That's probably shifting the dial a bit now.
Yeah.
And we initially were planning on exporting quite early on. We've dabbled. But New Zealand's just gone so well, we're just like, let's just double down and focus our energy here.
Yeah,
and,
that's fair.
You know, look
that's
after fair. Our own people. And because every other plant milk, you know, in the grocery aisle and that sort of ambient aisle, they're all imported and there's just been so many supply chain issues with them coming in to the country.
Oh.
And so we've had consistent supply. And so for us, it's like just been really important that we keep that up.
Stay on shelf, stay in stock. Fantastic. And it's easy. I mean, we could talk about this, right? The irony of today is I was thinking, oh, the Boring Oat Milk Company. God, that's going to be a tough interview. Actually, I think we could talk for ages. But and you've only been around 18 months and it feels like you're a bit of an overnight success. But sounds like the overnight success is built on years and years and years of knowledge. And
yeah, it's a 7-year overnight success.
Yeah, it's classic. Yeah. And also, you know, you're the front person. We see you, you know, your name around it, but actually you've had many other people in the business. You've had investment. You talked about that. Can you talk about that process of bringing others into your idea and having to share?
Yeah, I needed help. And I, again, like I said before, like I know my strengths, and but I also know where my shortfalls are. And I think that's really important to find those people who sort of fill your gaps.
Yeah.
From the get-go, I knew that this was going to be a money-hungry beast, and it was and still is. And so I went about trying to find investors, and I partnered with one set of investors. That didn't work out. And then same with the second round of investors. That didn't work out. And then third time lucky. And I'll tell you about my third ones in a second. But the first two, I think, again, it's just – I always felt like I needed to be that very stereotypical type of business person, which is very hustly, fake it till you make it, like, you know, you got to know it all. And I partnered with people who potentially weren't, or who definitely weren't aligned in terms of values. And again, because this is a product that is built on a purpose of sustainability, our costs are always going to be higher and our priorities are going to be different from somebody whose purpose is just purely financial gains. Mm. And so people say they believe in that, but then when push comes to shove, like that's when you show your true colours. And so it wasn't until, yeah, the third time. So here I was in May 2021. I had no investors. I was like 400 grand in debt. And
in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, not ideal. And then so I was like, okay, get back on the horse and start raising money again. By this stage, I was okay with sharing what I'd done because I knew I couldn't do this on my own, and nor would I want to. And so I had, who are now my investors and business partners, Apollo Foods. And so they were meant to be our contract manufacturer. They have their manufacturing in Hawke's Bay. They make a product called the Apple Press, and they've got incredible facilities. It's like they've spent a huge amount of money investing in this really top, like, state-of-the-art plant. And they have got a really strong technical team, supply chain, finance, you know, export. And I was just like, great.
And so, have some of that.
Yeah. And yeah, so they just turned around to me, and I don't even think I actually approached them about investing, but they just said, what about us? And I was like, that's sure, that's great. And it's just been really easy, which I think is, I mean, it's been easy on my side. On their side, I think, like, getting the product and the plant and scaling it up to the level that we've needed to has proved its challenges. But as rather than having a sort of contract manufacturing relationship with them, it's very much partnership. Deeper. And so, yeah, so I've just got this whole team now that are there and supporting me, and it's just, yeah, I couldn't do it without them.
Oh, brilliant.
Literally, and couldn't do it without them. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you'd be out there bottling it yourself, yes. Now, let's talk about Taranaki, because doing all of that, that's incredible growth, this amazing story, all these beautiful things have happened, you know, and you're living here. Tell us about your choice to live in Taranaki.
I mean, I was in Auckland for 10 years, and realising that for me, I needed that all elusive work-life balance, and I just love being in nature, and I love just like the access to nature. And so my husband and I started to look at properties around Auckland that were like just, you know, really close to the beach and getting further and further away from the city of Auckland, and then sort of looking at the commute. And then I actually realised, I was like, well, hang on, we don't actually need to be here. And again, because work is so hectic, I need that time off. Or as soon as I clock off, I just need to be like there in nature and just like recalibrate. And a couple of friends had moved back here, and I just always felt that draw back to the maunga and the sea. And it happened quite quickly, actually. We were here last summer. The summer was so good. And we just like started looking for properties and found one straight away and did it.
Fantastic. Yeah. No regrets?
No, not at all. Love it. I feel like I'm the unofficial ambassador for Ngamotu now.
I'm sure they'd be very happy to take you. Is it funny for you when you tell the rest of your partners and your suppliers and stuff that I'm based here in Taranaki? Do they go, oh, that's weird, or do they go, great? Oh,
I just think with COVID the way it is, like, and people being working remotely, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, because my partners are all in Hawke's Bay, they get it. Now they can't mock me about being the sort of yuppie and Grey Lynn, you know. But they were like, yeah, we get it. Like, family's really important to them. Lifestyle's really important. So they're really supportive in that way. And
fantastic. Now, what does the future hold for Boring? What's your boring future like?
Yeah, well, I always have these great ambitious plans, and then with like new product development and stuff like that, and then you just realize like actually how difficult it is. But we're doing quite a bit of work in terms of just looking more into the dairy alternative space and again how we create more high value products. But really it's just about building our brand in New Zealand and then looking at specific export markets. So in Asia, as you know, David, the New Zealand brand works really well in a lot of Asian countries, and you know, 90% of Asian population is lactose intolerant. They're already very sort of open to plant-based milks. And so, and that's something that really excites me. It's like selling that kind of New Zealand brand and getting it to win in an Asian country. That's what I think that would be, real icing on the cake for
me. Nice one.
Yeah.
You have that written in your little notebook? Have you got that little business plan kind of written up, ready to go?
No, I don't know where the notebook is. but then also, and then for us, it's just forever perfecting the product. And I mean that in terms of like the packaging and just making sure that, you know, just the work that we're doing with farmers and growers and just really sort of like validating and backing up our beliefs around oats and how they can work in farming systems.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And of course you're launching another product soon too. So that will be another whole dimension to your life.
Hapu, so due middle of the year.
Fantastic.
So, so just trying to
Getting the sense of you, you're going to probably, you know, do something other amazing thing at the same time because you seem to want to make life difficult for yourself.
I definitely don't want to be, I mean, for me, I think old me would have just been like, cool, have a baby and then just like straight up
back to it.
But maybe it's a Taranaki influence and I'm just like, no, you know, I really want to be a present mum. So just figuring out how that will work.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Well, I know you'll make it work. You'll make everything work. You're incredible.
Thank you.
I've got two or maybe three quick fire questions for you.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. So what's your dream day here in Taranaki?
Oh, a morning surf at Fitzroy Beach. So it's just a few minutes walk from our house.
Nice.
So going straight down there when it's a nice day and you can look back and see the mountain, that's pretty special. Going there, then I go to Monica's by Gavette Brewster for brunch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Love that place.
Do great avocado and toast. And they, of course, serve boring oat milk. So
good.
Yeah. And then I just love Pukekuta Park. So, I mean, to be honest, like if there's anything like the, you know, the Festival of the Lights that was on and all the like gigs that were on at the park. It's just incredible. And I love going there even when it's a slightly rainy day and it's a little bit drizzly. And yeah, and then to finish it off, I'm like a big fan of out in Oakura, there's a really great pizza spot that's at called Black Sands Pizza. Yep. And it's right at the surf club and it's just got the most incredible view. So yeah, just beachside, parkside.
Sounds glorious. I'm sold. Okay, what's the second question? What's the best thing about living and working in Taranaki?
The accessibility to nature, yeah.
Nice.
It's just right there for people. So.
And my final question, if you weren't doing boring oat milk and you could find that bloody notebook that had all these other really good ideas in it, what would you be doing?
Yeah, I'm really interested in the seaweed space. I don't have it in me to start another business anytime soon, but it would be, there's just some incredible businesses and people working either in the seaweed space or, you know, plant-based protein as well, and sort of really looking at like how, to be honest, again, it would just be around like looking at how to improve biodiversity on land and also in the ocean. And so it would be something to do with that. I actually wanted to be an environmental engineer when I was young. And so it continued to be something like that. But I'd probably just work for someone else's company.
Right. I'll be there. So, I love that. Yeah. I'll just be a boring CV engineer.
Yeah. I mean, again, like if you find the right people to partner with, that's awesome. But I wouldn't start it on my own again, that's for sure.
Nice. Because you're doing so well with this one.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Oh, Morgan, so good to meet you and talk to you. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thanks so much for listening, and a special thanks to Venture Taranaki for making the Power Up podcast possible. If you're an entrepreneur or looking to get a new venture off the ground in Taranaki, visit the Venture Taranaki website and their business support services on offer that could help you bring your idea to life. If you're not familiar with Taranaki, come and take a look. There's something here for everyone. With a supportive business community, vibrant towns, unrivaled experiences, and abundant nature, Taranaki is humming. Your entrepreneurial flair, enterprise, and career will flourish here, and you and your family can make Taranaki your home. Lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others find us.